One.
What's going on, everybody? We're live from the 2019 National for another episode of the Mojo Sessions. We are joined today with Big Shep and Stefan. What's going on, guys? These guys have an amazing podcast called About the Cards. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. It's my first one. It's great to be here and check it out and sit down with you guys. It's been awesome, and thanks for saying the nice words about our podcast. We just try.
Yeah.
You guys
look like you're having a lot of fun doing it. So, I mean, I think that's the most important thing, is just being able to, you guys look like you hang out, make fun of each other, and have a good time. Kind of like what me and Dan do. So it's
something like that. Is that what we do?
I think we do.
I think actually we do the podcast. I think we do it for the money.
Oh, yeah?
Cause
all that money we've got?
We make that long money, because everybody knows money is in podcasting.
Yeah.
That's where the money's at.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. That's how we're paying for this extravagant trip here to Chicago this
2021.
Weekend.
2021.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So what's the craziest thing you guys have seen on the floor so far?
I think it was the 8 packs of 1952 Tops for almost $600,000, just right there, right in front of you.
Jesus.
And that was pretty crazy. And then, two, it's some of the athletes just walking around, like Marshall Faulk, like right over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And, you know, nobody knew who he was, so.
Dan might have a freak out moment. He might take a shirt off and run over there.
I mean, he was
Marshall Faulk.
Sean Mannion?
Oh, well, no.
Jim Everett?
Second, Marshall Faulk.
What's Chris Everett? James' number?
No, nobody?
Chris Everett?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Chrissy Everett. There we go.
No, and I saw a Walter Johnson Cy Young's dual auto ball.
Wow.
That's, I don't exactly have $1,600, but I wish I did.
Yeah, right? So did you guys open the $600,000 packs or no?
No.
How many did you get?
Yeah. Yeah, I passed on that because I'm going to go buy those 52 Tops, and I'm going to open them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, last year's National, they opened that pack on stage, and somebody hit, like, you remember that, right?
Yep,
that 50,000. Yeah. Crazy.
Dude, that was one of the craziest things. Like, it was vintage breaks, right?
Yeah. He lost his mind.
I thought his eyes were actually going to pop out of his head.
He was a cartoon character.
He looked like a cartoon character. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So I probably asked you this on the last podcast, but we'll go over again because we get some new listeners. But how did you guys get together and do this show? Tell us the beginning of this.
Well, we listen to a lot of, like, I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and you guys was one of them, and it inspired me to want to do one, and do one from the collector's view. And the other co-host Ben and I talked about it. Steph put it on Twitter. Hey, I have a mic and camera.
We'll travel.
And, yeah. And it just started that way. We wanted to kind of copy what Cardboard Connection Radio did back in the day.
Yeah.
Review products. You know, take questions, kind of that stuff. And it's kind of what we've been doing. So.
Yeah. You know, what I do miss around here is seeing Doug Cataldo.
Mm-hmm.
He, after the show was over, I haven't seen him anymore, man. They had a great show.
Yeah.
Definitely. So how many episodes are you guys on now?
We've done 57 weekly episodes, and then we've also done a couple of live on locations, we call them.
Nice.
And then the collector spotlight. So we do interviews where we'll have a collector, a friend of ours from Twitter, and or somebody in the hobby we'll sit down with and just talk about collecting in the hobby with them for about an hour or so.
Nice.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, like one of our, you know, we had a Rich Klein, who worked for Beckett for forever on, and he works for ComC now, and he's just a wealth of knowledge, and we could have talked to him for like 3 hours.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's awesome. So.
Yeah, I must admit, I got to go back and listen to that one. I must have missed that one, but he does Klein's Corner, I think, right?
Yep.
He does the blog. Yeah, that's awesome. So how did you get the, obviously probably a Twins fan, but the Junk Whack Twins, how did that come to be? Were you just starting Twitter? You're like, that's what I got to do.
Well, pretty much. I was looking at it, and, you know, it's a whole lot easier to get, you know, a team set of like 1989 Donruss Twins set. But then you look at them, and it's like, well, there's a variation with this through the entire set run, so there's two cards of each player that you need.
Yeah.
And then there's, oh, by the way, on top of that, there's another, so now you need four of them. So it's that era that's just, it fits right in my budget.
Nice.
In everyone's budget.
Yeah.
I collect the Twins, so nah, there's that.
How many Kirby Puckets do you have?
Individual, probably a good 1,000, 2,000.
Is that the most cards you have of anybody, or?
Most individual, easily. The more higher value, probably Carew or Killebrew.
Nice. What's your favorite card in your set, if you had to pick one? I know it's like kids, you can't just pick one, but if you had to pick one card, what's your favorite card?
I have two.
Okay.
One for the Twins and one not.
Okay.
So I traded a 2011 update Mike Trout, ungraded, for a PSA 4.5 Killer Brew 55 Tops.
Ooh, nice.
Rookie year, love it. Broke even, maybe.
Nice, nice, nice.
And then for not my team set, I broke from a card shop in Dallas a box of 2015 Diamond Kings, and I pulled a numbered 10 Babe Ruth dual relic.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Those are awesome looking. With amazing the deco in the back, card. Yeah. Definitely, definitely. You probably have a lot of, or at least a few, the new Stadium Club Killer Brew.
Yes.
Did you hear the story? Sue's told us today.
I looked it up.
Yeah, yes. I guess he was hurt.
The 68 All-Star Game, he got injured stretching out trying to beat out someone's fielding play, and they put him on a stretcher, wheeled him out, and he was out for a couple weeks that season. But me and Kraken Wax and a couple other guys were like, hey, I don't think he was injured. I mean, there's really only a couple years it could be, and then, you know, I looked it up on Getty's because that's, for the most part, where Topps pulls out the
biggest. Right, right.
I was like, 68 All-Star Game in Houston. I'm like, yeah, so that's probably about the right time frame, maybe even afterwards. Maybe a poor photo choice on Topps' part. But
right. Yeah, well, the photo at first, I thought he was having, like, skateboarding or like, sure, having fun because he doesn't look like he's grimacing. Maybe he was, but it looked like a smile to me. You know, it looked like he was like, ooh, but, yeah, now it makes sense. So, yeah.
Exactly.
They probably didn't know that either because they probably don't put any photos of injuries on cards.
Right, they probably try not to. I'd hope.
You're at right? Shep, what's your favorite card in your collection?
75 Topps Brett.
Okay.
It was the one card I couldn't afford as a kid, and now, you know, I have about 10 of the regular and then a handful of mini, so.
Yeah. Yep. Is that the only year they did the regular and the mini like that for that flagship?
That in 12.
Right.
Because they released the mini in 2012 at the National.
Right.
It was a big thing.
They did have a few in the late 80s, like 87 I know has minis, and I think 88, 89, before they rolled into like the Topps Mini with stickers on the back as a separate product.
Right. And the Yount is the same year as the Brett, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, because I remember pulling some from a buyback, pulling both for the mini and the regular.
Very nice.
But that's awesome. So let's get into talking about some, did you guys see Gary Vee? Did you guys get a chance to?
Yeah, he was just on a few minutes ago, and I was walking by, and I was like, I just need to take a break and hang out here and listen to these guys. Well, he walks up, and I had the front row seat, so I was periscoping the whole video.
Nice.
And I asked him a question. I said, you know, hey, if you got a chance, would you buy Topps? And he said, I would buy any of the brands that I could. And, you know, to be involved in the hobby. It was good information. He kind of was very honest with why he's in the hobby, what he's doing. And
yeah,
it cleared up a lot of things, misconceptions I think people have about him. And, you know, we've talked about him on our show going back almost a year, and people have kind of changed, I think, their ideas. There's two camps now, but I really think he's good because he's bringing a spotlight to the hobby.
Yeah,
that's going to bring new people in. So it's going to make this a lot more fun. There's going to be a lot more involved. And he parallel-lined it with comics.
Right.
And how that was a really nerdy thing, and all of a sudden now it's very mainstream. And to bring this back, that would be that'd be fun to see.
Yeah, he was dropping some F-bombs over there and stuff. Yeah. I was like, wow,
he wasn't holding back.
Yeah, yeah, he was an open book up there, and I had the kind of the same reaction too as I was, you know, kind of hesitant about him kind of coming here and doing the show. But after hearing him talk, I mean, seems like the guy's he's legit, you know. And
absolutely.
Yeah, like you said, it's shedding a good spotlight. I think, you know, collectors are weird. You know, we don't, like, it was almost like he was like the new rich kid on the block. Like, you know, you'd been on that block for 20 years, and then all of a sudden this guy just builds a mansion and he knows everything on your block, right?
Yep.
And I think that's what people were thinking. But I think, you know, it was good for him to get up there, say how he feels, and I like how he's like, I don't really care about what you guys think about me. I'm just going to do what I do.
Right.
So.
I like the message he's sending with, collecting base rookies. Like, we need more collectors who are not going to be just chasing the parallels, the silver Lucas, the autos, the NTRPAs. That's easy. But I like the idea that he's talking about just collect the base rookie cards.
Yeah.
Let's add value to the base cards.
Yeah, and I've been in that camp for a long time. That's been my big thing, is collecting Hall of Fame rookies, current rookies, the base cards, because one, they're affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And two, long term, you see what the Trout's just blown up. But the other guys, I mean, even the Acuna's rookie card, an update, it has taken off. And it's one of those things that's what we used to always collect, was that rookie card. And I love that. I'd much rather have that than autos and relics and that kind of stuff. So I like the fact that he's bringing that back. And he's like, hey, that's what I know. That's what I'm going to stick with. And, you know, that's a good thing, because he knows what he wants to collect. So.
Yeah. And I think it's just good. It's good for the industry.
Yep.
It's good.
Yep, definitely.
It's crazy. Talking about update. Update seems to be one of the hottest sets to collect every year for rookies. I mean, I sit there and think, like, when's the last time Update has gone down? Update usually comes out, stays around, you know, regular market price, and then it starts creeping up once a rookie gets hot.
Yep.
I mean, dude, I remember 2011, we had a bunch or a fair amount of Update, and we couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
We just holding on. I mean,
now it's like
probably ended up,
yeah.
We probably ended up giving it away for free packs, like, or just opening it up ourselves and putting the cards in a shoebox somewhere.
Yeah. One of the things I think that drives that is that some of those rookies, that's the only rookie card they have.
Yeah.
Because they weren't around the whole season, right? Mm-hmm. And two, it's some of the guys are held back from the contract, right? Because they can have, if they bring them up late, they have that extra year.
Yes.
So it brings in some higher level prospects in there, and there's no factory set.
Right.
So you can only get it from pack pull, and so it just makes it a little bit different of a challenge, even though they're making as much Update as the Series 1 and 2. It just has that different feel to it.
Yep.
And I love it. So that's always fun to do those. That's why you always tuck those rookies away, because you never know. If you look at 11, you have Blackman, who was really nothing.
Yep.
JD Martinez wasn't big.
Yep.
Altuve wasn't superstar.
That's right.
And all those guys, it was Hosmer and Moustakas. Trout, kind of Trout. D. Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, D. Gordon.
Scherzer, no 08.
Yeah.
He was a Diamondback. No one cared.
And then staying on that as well, what about this year with Vlad coming out in Series 2, but didn't have a number on the back of it? He's obviously going to have a rookie and Update. Which one do you think people are going to gravitate towards as his true Topps rookie card? You think it's going to be the one without the logo on it, or without the number on the back, or the one that comes out in Update?
Probably the first official Update card. Just because the Series 2 is kind of a short card, but it's really not. It is and it isn't. And I definitely guess that probably Update would be the main rookie.
That's what my pick would be,
too. And
they've
done that a few years in the past, too. I can't think right offhand of some of the players, but they
did. Well, they did last year, the Acuna and Torres, they were both number replacements, short prints.
Yeah.
And then they had their Updates. And the Updates are the ones everybody's saying is a true rookie card, and they're not chasing those short prints, and those short prints are, I think, to me, are the rookie card. But.
Right, yeah, yeah. And well, it was weird because we were doing jumbo cases, and you know, I thought Vlad was going to be like maybe one per case, but it was like four per case, you know. So I'm like, it's really not that short printed. So, you know, I'm wondering what the ratio is going to be. I mean, on a regular rookie, it's usually what, one per jumbo box.
Yeah,
so
usually in a jumbo, you should get a complete set.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's what they say at least. Yeah. So, but you're right about the fact that I think when they you know, this year it was a Kyle Tucker, you know, was the kind of guy that was the first rookie. They can't, you know, they don't know if Vlad's going to come up. They don't know. So I think Update always is that thing that falls into the Update's hands, right? They see these guys play and they're putting them in there. So, I mean, even Heritage high number is going to be insane.
Oh, yeah.
I think the boxes are already, like, tripled, I think, or something like that.
And the thing, too, is you look at those Series 1 guys, those Series 1 rookies, you know those are the guys you're going to see all year long in every product.
Right, right.
And then, you know, so I'm surprised Pete Alonso is in Jimenez or in as many products as they are now.
Right.
And in Guerrero, you see them start to slide these guys in.
Right.
And, like, Chrome is always a 200-card base set, and this year it's 204.
Because
those four rookies
got slid them in
last
yeah.
second. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Have you guys got a chance to watch some box breaks of Topps Chrome or broken any boxes yourself?
I saw one pack opened, jumbo pack, but I haven't seen any box breaks yet. Has it been good?
I opened one, and I didn't really get anything. I mean, I got, like, Sionel Perez, you know, none of the big rookies. But Topps Chrome for us, you know, we do a bunch of cases of it, but it seems like the big names are just so hard to hit. That's the one thing that we talked about in the podcast before, and I want to get you guys' thoughts on it. It almost seems like unfair from Topps to say, like, well, Sionel Perez base, and then you got Vlad's base. Well, they're not equal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's blatantly obvious.
There's 1,000 of that one and 200 of that one.
Right. Yeah. So I'm like, I know they need to leave some mystery and you know, some chase there, but it's like some of these guys are busting cases after cases thinking that, if there's 80 guys on the checklist, if I buy five cases, I'm probably going to hit one of each one, right?
Didn't you guys talk about that in 19 Bowman, how you've opened so much, and you haven't seen Vlad autos?
Right, and I don't know if that's the case with Chrome, because I haven't seen enough opened. I'm just kind of speculating. But I remember Bellinger year. You just would never pull Bellinger or Judge. You open case after case, and you'd never hit them. So.
Well, and I know back in the day, early 2000s, mid 2010s, they would actually have, like, Tier A, these players, Tier B, these players, and it was very obvious that it's like stated print runs up.
Right.
These ones are so much easier, and I think, you know, they're maybe doing the same thing now, but they're just not announcing it.
Yeah, you're right. It used to say Tier A, and it'd have like these names, and it'd be Tier B. I mean, do you think collectors would be okay with bringing that back, or do you think it's better the way that it is now?
I would like to know that. That way, when you're opening it, you have your expectations kind of set when you're looking at product, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, I know it's going to be a tougher pull, but I like the product anyway, so I'm going to go after it. Versus opening product, you know, I might be a fan of, but you think you're going to have the same chance of getting a Vlad auto versus, you know, Garrett Hampson auto, who's my guy, which, you know, if you have that, let me know. But
has he gotten called back up yet?
He came back up when Story got hurt, and then he's still up kind of playing kind of everywhere. They moved in the outfield a little bit too. So,
well, Ben must have been digging on you about Hampson when he was talking about archives, right?
Yeah.
That was more of a I get it now.
It was a shot across the bow, but he collects the A's, so
right.
We all know how good those guys are.
That's pretty cheap collecting then, right? Yeah. Well, is Ramon Laureano hurt for a while now?
I don't know, he got hurt?
I think he's out for 4 weeks, I think.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
Oh, wow.
Man, the A's can't catch a break.
That's their superstar right there.
Can't catch anything else either, but
yeah.
Did the Twins get somebody from the Giants?
Relief pitcher, yeah, they did.
Did you get Watson or no, Dyson?
Dyson, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know what the Giants are thinking, getting rid of almost all their bullpen. But
yeah, they got Scooter Gennett, though.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey, he hit a grand slam, like, twice in one game, like, in 2017 or something.
Oh, that's right. He had that Topps Now card that I was like, whoa, okay, he got a Topps Now card. So we'll see. He fits in the Giants mold. He'll, you know, hit 4 home runs a year.
Have you guys been by St. PWCC?
No, they're here.
They're here. And,
allegedly.
Allegedly. I walked by, and it's just that the Brent guy was there, and somebody was talking to him and patting him on the back, and he's just shaking his head. And I just wanted to be like, you know what happened.
Right.
There's messages everybody's seen. Just own up to it and, you know, and move on, right? And
I'm surprised he's here.
Yeah, they're showing face. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Sure.
I thought maybe they'd put like just a TV of his face and he'd be able to communicate with who he wants or something.
Well, I also
you know?
Was going to make a shirt that said RIP Rick Probstein and wear it around and just kind of see how he felt.
He's here too, I heard, right?
Yeah. No, and see how he felt about that after the Skaggs thing. You know, you guys brought that up about, you know, you guys do your buyback product.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys have a lot of products and the graded product and stuff you want to put in there. But the stand you guys made and said, you know what, we're going to try to stay away and not give those guys our money and go elsewhere, I think it's awesome because when you guys have such a platform and you've set such a standard in this hobby for what you guys do, which is amazing, and I plug you all the time because
appreciate that.
Hands down, best of the business, and that they're not paying me to say that. I've felt that since I think 2012 when I got back in. I found you guys online and ever since then just started following. But it's awesome because if you stand up to it, a lot of other people are going to go, man, if they're doing it, then I don't have to go there for that. I can go somewhere else. There's other avenues. Look at all the dealers in here that are selling. So.
Right. Well, we did that. Actually, a guy came up in a Flyers jersey, and he was like, thanks for that Ray Emery. He's like, F that guy, you know, basically. There was an advertisement, and I'm not going to mention who because we've already talked about it, but there was an advertisement right after Ray Emery died about his cards on COMC, or his cards at Burbank or whatever, and it was run by, you know.
Yeah, we talked about
starts
that
with a B show. And ends with a T, but
That's our buddy. His name's James, Philly Puck fan. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
We bought the card for him because he lost it in a flood or something, so we bought him the card and sent it to him to say, hey, because he was a big supporter of our show really early on.
Nice.
Yeah, but yeah, that whole Ray Emery thing was, again, like, those things have to be pointed out.
I mean, we all know that people are trying to make money in this hobby, you know, I mean, people are trying to support their collections or, you know, buying new stuff and selling to get new stuff, but, you know, you got to kind of do it with taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to like respect the hobby, you know? It's almost like, you know, those baseball rules where you can't walk on the mound and you know stuff like that. It's unwritten. You just don't do that stuff.
Yep.
Right.
You know. So
we talked about the RIP in the listing.
Yes.
The Probstein one.
Yeah, we were just talking. Yeah.
Was the one that really really pissed me off to the point where we buy so many buyback cards. I refuse to buy anything from Probe State.
I will not
give them any more money.
Yeah, and I love that.
I mean,
and I'll say it's been a lot harder to buy cards,
yeah,
but because I mean, you're like, God damn it, he has so many cards.
Put our products together, but I mean, and I was willing to spend a little bit more than market value. It's because I mean, you look at it, and he has the product. He has everything that you need in so many listings.
Right,
but. Dude, that was it, man.
Like, well, and I mean, those cards, I mean, are just always
the
going
Tyler,
for more
the Tyler
too.
Tyler Skaggs,
you know?
Listing that was, dude. I'm done with that.
Yeah,
that was the final straw.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go back into the trimming thing here. So, I mean, I'm surprised you see. I mean, you guys heard any news? I know the Washington Post is investigating them, right? So
yeah, they have somebody looking into it. And if you like, Colin on his last podcast kind of mentioned he can't say, but he can say. So, you know, I think he might have been one of the guys the FBI talked to.
Oh.
Because those two guys were the ones that were out hands down, like, saying, hey, check out this information. And this is all coming from two or three blowout forum guys,
right,
spending a ton of time. The FBI should hire these guys to be investigators because what they're finding. And every day they find more and more and more. It's crazy.
I want to know who the 3-1 whatever guy is on blowout, the COMC name, because
yeah.
I'm like, man, this guy must have a lot of free time. I mean, and for good reason, but
yeah.
I'm like, dude, he's like, where are you even finding the original cards,
right,
to match them up? And I mean, you could see they're the same card, but like, where do you even, I mean, if it's past eBay a year, how do you find it? I mean,
yeah. My question is when they go to grade a card, how do you, when it's been trimmed, it's definitely a different size, right? So how do you not know that it's a smaller size?
Right.
Well, that's all I want to know.
Yeah.
And not to imply that that's what they're doing, but you know, on like the old school like paper cutter trim things?
Yeah.
But they actually have the sizing board on there. How do the grading companies not have a sizing board that they can slot the card in and see 2.5 by 3.5?
Right. And you think with modern cards that everything would be cut right. But I mean, do you think it's more of an issue with, like you said, the old cards?
The vintage could be
they probably
different.
Hand cut them, right? I mean,
and especially OPG.
Right.
Some of those are horrible.
Right, right. So then maybe you naturally had cards smaller out of the pack, but I think if you're dealing with modern cards, I think, I forgot who said it, but if you stack your cards up, they're all the same size, right?
Yeah. So you bust a box and you put them all together.
There's not one sticking out.
There might be one in a thousand packs you open. It has a little extra card stock on it, but very rarely does that happen.
So, I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked about it on your show. What do you think the solution, and how do we move on past this scandal?
I think the biggest thing is until they figure it out, is to pull back from the grading aspect of it. Keep collecting. Collect what you want. If you want to collect grading, awesome. But pull back until there's better technology. There has to be technology out there to do it.
Yeah.
And just wait.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is all these people are going to submit to the current grading companies. Somebody's going to come out with the right technology, and then no one's going to want it in that holder because they're going to want it in the new holder because this pop is all about the new shiny. So when there's XYZ grading company that's doing this with computer grading, that's where everybody's going to go, and that's how everybody's going with their card in that slab.
Right.
You know, my biggest thing is in grading is to know it's an authentic. If you're buying vintage cards, hey, is it authentic? That's all I really care about.
Right, right.
Versus, you know, so.
Well, and there's so much that gets through that, you know, everyone wants to grade that one refractor, the second, the numbered refractor, the third tier above that refractor, that they're getting so much quantity that it's hard to dictate, okay, well, oh, here's one 1952 Topps that's slightly miscut, and they'll just miss it.
Now,
that would be understandable, but when an individual submitter gets, like, all PSA 10s, or all black labels, or all of this, kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought, and you don't have to make it public, but if something gets questioned, maybe you have it. Like, why don't they have a video being filmed, like, 24/7? Like, you know, here's order number 1327, you know, and I'm, you know, doing this, and I'm looking at it, you know, and it's filmed. So that way, if it's like, hey, was it trimmed, then you could be like, let's look up 1327, watch the video, make it public, say, hey, we have them, we're just not, you know, we don't put it public unless there's a problem. And yeah, maybe he missed it, you know, it was right there, but I don't know if that's too hard for them to do, but it might be something to think about with what's going on, because then you have a little bit more transparency.
Yeah, if there was more transparency and a lot of people's questioning it, they could be, they could probably stomach it better,
right?
Than not knowing. It's that not knowing that's been the crazy part. So
right,
well, and I think that would be a big thing. Is like if one of the actual grading companies, instead of doing all of their grading behind black shrouded boots,
right,
actually just did it right out in the open. Okay.
Right, showing you how you do it.
Right, this
yeah.
is right. Okay. Now we're gonna go do the proprietary pressing behind the scenes. But here, this is what we looked
well,
at.
Well, because you see some guys that submit, you know, card shops that take them in, right, and they're gonna submit them for you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you start submitting large quantities like that, and you're a good customer of theirs. Why
right.
would they want to distract, you know, deter you from sending more cards in all of the time?
Right. And you know? I always thought that, like, okay, maybe a gem Jordan comes in 86, 87, and they give it a 10, right? And they're like, wow, it's a 10, right? Up the pop report. What if the exact same basically shape of Jordan comes in the next day? I feel like they would just be like, we just gave a 10 out yesterday. We can't
do it. Yeah, it's got to be
know,
9.5.
That looks better than this one.
Right. Yeah, and they could give reasoning why, but I feel like they're creating a chase, because if they just gave out 10s, then we would have no market, right? So if they gave out 110, they can't get out of 10 the next day. You know, and I'm just, in my mind, I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but, you know, it seems like that's why we need transparency, and maybe that's why they're not showing transparency, because they have those ratios. They maybe have their big spenders that are coming in and they're getting these big grades. Because I noticed I submitted 5 cards one time and got like 195, and I submitted 50 cards one time and I got my first 10. So, I mean, you know, it could have been luck of the draw, but, you know, it's like I submitted more.
Yeah.
Not out of the realm of possibility.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, I think most collectors aren't even really – we're paying attention to it because we're so involved in the hobby, but I don't think a lot of these people really even pay attention to it, to be honest.
So, yeah, I'm a fantasy baseball league guy from guys from Twitter, and a lot of these guys are huge prospectors, and we have a little DM going back.
Sure.
They didn't
– Yeah, I know.
They didn't realize the trimming scandal was going on, and these guys are collecting graded cards like crazy. The one guy's got every Trout ever graded.
Wow.
That's not one of one. So, and they had no idea this was going on, and they're asking me about it, and they're like, oh God, really? Oh, and they started questioning their own collections. So. I think it's a small population that knows what's going on, and it's those guys, the gals that are really involved in what's, like, that are doing a podcast or that have a
right.
shop or, not,
right.
or you, I'm sorry, not even a shop, but breakers and stuff like that, guys that are more online with it. So
yeah for sure. I mean, and I mean, that's where we're educating people here, and that's one of the great things about having a voice out here and being able to do a podcast.
Yep.
Is to let everybody know that, hey, this stuff is, you know, you might look at more closely. Like, if you're gonna buy a card that's over $100, maybe you should try to just research it a little bit longer and not just make a snap decision. Because I think people are so quick with the PWCC auctions, with the Pro Scene auctions. I've done it many a times. As you see that it's got 30 seconds left, and you're like, I gotta put my bid.
Yeah,
I gotta. Well, and then you don't even have any time to just look it up. You don't even have any time to maybe find it raw. You don't even have time to maybe see if it's been resold or reslapped.
It's that fear of missing out.
Yeah, FOMO, exactly. That's what it is. It's like, I got 30 seconds, and then I'm outbid. I got to beat. And then it's like that competitive comes out too, right?
Yeah.
Of people.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm like, I always try to, I told people on the podcast before, I'm like, if you're, you know, buying a card, it's numbered to 99, there's probably going to be another one. You know, maybe if it's a 101, get involved and try to, you know, get it at the last minute. But you can always wait if you have patience and find the right card, you know.
And then find the right price for yourself and,
right.
you know. Don't spend the mortgage to buy that one card.
Right, right.
And that's something you see even on the field here, the map.
Yeah.
You go to one shop, and okay, this is $5. You go to another, it's $2, and this one is $20.
Right.
Well, unless there's a serious condition change, I'm buying the $2 one.
Right.
Shopping around.
Right.
It's just financially wise.
Right. And that's the thing. Some people don't want to sell at that price. Some people need the money, and, you know, you can find that variance in price out there. So. Now that you guys have kind of walked it in, I wouldn't obviously say you're experts. I'm not an expert on the National, but do you guys have any advice for people that have never been here on how to take in the National?
Slowly. being my first, I walked in, and it's very overwhelming. And so I came yesterday and kind of walked the floor, bought a few things, but mostly just oriented myself where everything was. And just kind of took it in, because you have this like fear of missing out when you're walking in. All
right.
The good stuff's getting taken already.
Right.
And it's just like, slow down. It's there.
Right.
It'll be like, stuff will be there, but enjoy it. And it's the biggest thing I've taken away is meeting so many people I've met on Twitter that I've known for a decade that
right.
I've never physically met. Like, we're 2.5 hours or so away, and I've tried to come by a couple times, it's just not worked out. But we had to come to Chicago to meet.
I know, isn't that funny?
So
yeah, yeah.
I've known Steph like 9 years, and we did a podcast together, and we just met for the first time yesterday.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I think this is my fourth show, wife's fifth. Tim brings up a great point, you know. The best part of the show is actually running into guys that either A, haven't met, or B, you've known and talked to online, but you don't actually see them in person.
Right.
Putting the name to the face, but also, you know, you're going to find stuff here that you're not going to find anywhere else, or, you know, maybe not so much in Dallas because everybody and their mother's there. And there's a lot of quality stuff. But, you know, someone from Iowa or someone from Michigan or, you know, stuff that you don't see or being able to add to that collection. Or, you know, like my wife, her one pickup today was a bobblehead.
Was it what? Bobblehead?
Bobblehead.
Nice.
Well, a nodder specifically because it nods and doesn't bother.
Yeah.
But
nodder.
It's just those are difficult to find and... This is where you find it.
I picked up a 68 Willie Mays today for a steal, and it's because I'm not in California.
Right.
I'm in Giants country.
Right, right.
And it's awesome not to pay that premium because I collect a local team. So.
Right. Yeah. Chris Bryant, forget about it, right? I mean, Javier Baez is probably way up there. Speaking of pricing, have you guys noticed that most of the guys that are selling, you know, hits and not just the dollar singles, do they have their prices or most people don't?
About 50-50.
About 50-50?
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd say 50-50, and, you know, not on each individual card, but they'll, like, have it on the box. Everything in here is this price.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've noticed, so I was talking to a couple dealers, the junk wax has been flying off the shelves, and the prices are ridiculous. Like, 87 tops, $20 a box. I saw a box of 88 tops for $50.
Jeez.
I lost my mind. I was like, that can't happen. That's not true.
You could buy five of those, right?
Yeah.
At least. I mean, geez. Well, and do you think, I mean, with the times I've had a chance to walk the floor, I almost feel like some people aren't even trying to sell. They're trying to show off.
Some of it, yeah.
Because you ask them what their price is, and you're like, wow. You know, like, I can't even negotiate from there. Like,
yeah, I think it's just like, hey, look what I have, and you don't.
Right, right. There was a guy, I just told the story outside. We were building a buyback, and it was a Dak Prescott. This was 2017 National, and it was a Dak Prescott Rookie Immaculate Shield Auto, right? It was a pretty expensive card, and so I'm walking up to the guy, and I'm like, hey, how much are you looking for that? And he's all, I'll do 18. And I'm all, will you do 17.5? Or, you know, 1,000? And he's like, yeah. Or I think we were still on the single-digit numbers, right? So he's like, yeah. And Dan had the cash. I'm like, you get the cash? So I give you $1,800. He goes, no, $18,000, buddy. And I'm like, what? What?
Right.
I'm like, $18,000? I mean, I think the card wound up selling something similar to it, sold for like maybe $2,000 at the height of DAC. But this guy was thinking because it was a shield, it was 1-1, he's going to ask $18,000 for it. And I'm like, why even try to sell it? Why even have it for sale? So I keep it at home.
Canary, Babe Ruth, and your Eric Hosmer.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy, huh?
What happened?
There's a guy that's a canary, Babe Ruth, was at 11 tops. And every so often, he shows it off.
On Twitter, yeah.
All the time. And it's like, yeah, we know you have that card. It's whatever, why, you know.
How much does he want for it, like 100K?
Yeah, he wants the world. I think if Babe Ruth came back and asked for it, he would still tell him no.
I saw that floating around. It's a beautiful card, but
yeah,
it's not got a memorabilia piece in it, and it doesn't have an auto on it. So, I mean.
And it's not the Mike Trout from that year. So
right. You know, that was a weird thing. I mean, it was their anniversary, but that design was pretty cool. That canary design.
Oh yeah.
I almost wish they'd bring it back, but I know it was like kind of a one-time deal that year.
Yeah, those were sweet cards.
Because they did them in Bowman too. They had the Bowman version of them too.
I like those little chase variations, or when they add that different color to rainbow to celebrate something. It's a little fun because even if you get a so-so or just a relief pitcher, and someone's trying to chase that set down, you know, you can pay for the box.
Right.
You just have something cool to talk about. That's it's the only one out there. So
that just totally reminded me of the fun of the diamond. Where you take the code?
Oh,
and you go on their app, dude. That was so fun. Like I was going to Target. And buying packs just like the ones that had them on the front, they had like the one on the front, and maybe there was two or three, I think, too. I'm like, dude, yeah, get a scratch, because I like won so many of those diamond parallels in there, and you get those rings, and you're trying to collect all the rings. I mean, that was a lot of fun. I'm surprised they scratched that.
So what's the best card you got out of that program?
Oh, man, I think I got the Babe Ruth diamond, not like the number to 50 that they made for that year, I think. I had some really nice, I hit a Mickey Mantle, like, 70 or something like that. It wasn't a really expensive Mickey Mantle, because they had the vintage cards in there, and most of the time you'd hit crappy ones, but there was a few nice ones that I had, and I don't even know if I had them sent to me or not. I got to figure out what happened to those. Maybe they ended the program. Got too busy.
Yeah, that, or they wanted $40 to ship a single card.
So. That's probably what it was. Yeah.
That's only ETOPS. But
right. What did you guys get? Did you guys get anything crazy on there?
I didn't get anything out of there. So
I had a couple hundred that I kind of traded here and there, and I got because they produce those jagged edge cards.
That's the one I was talking about. I think I got a Babe Ruth like that.
I got a Rod Carew. There's a Killer Brew and a Mauer. So I got those three, and then I traded everything else in my inventory for like a 52. Senator
high number. Right,
right. So,
yeah, that was the fun thing too, is that you had the trades going on because everybody had the inventory with tops.
Yeah.
It must have been something where they were like losing a lot of money or something, where they're like, we can't do this again. But because it was like, if they kept it going every year, I mean, that thing could be freaking huge. You know, introduce some more cards and introduce, I mean, you could put out a set that was like crap and put those in there, and people probably buy it for those things because they're so cool, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and that's probably where they got their Topps buyback stamps from.
Right, yeah.
All of that inventory.
Right, right. For sure. Well, we don't want to take up too much of you guys' time. I know it's like a lot of fun walking around the National, and but we appreciate you guys. Tell people how they can find the show and find you guys on Twitter as well.
No, yeah, thank you. It's always about the cards on Twitter. If you search us on YouTube about the cards, you can subscribe there. We signed up with Podbean. We're on iTunes. Anywhere you get a podcast or listen to Mojo's podcast, you're going to probably find us. If you ask Alexa, she'll play it.
Really? I got to try that out.
Stunned me. I fell over. My little guy's always baby shark.
Oh, yes.
So I said to play my podcast and did, and then he got all excited because he heard my voice. So I felt very famous that afternoon. So,
you're like, look, I'm talking out of that thing on the radio.
Yeah, and it's cool. And we have a small blog we haven't done a lot with, but about the cards.wordpress.com.
Sweet.
We put up checklists. We put up some reviews. We also have some collector tips and stuff on there. Steph's, you're at Junk Wax Twins,
yeah.
Ben, who's not here, Ben Wilson's at our Trading Cards, and I'm at BigShep79 on Twitter. So follow us, let us know. We love to hear from our listeners and collectors. That's how mostly we build our show. So
definitely.
I mean, we'll scroll through Twitter and like, hey, that's interesting. Let's talk about it. Hey, yeah. you want to talk about that? Let's talk about it.
I try to like, I love being on Twitter, but it like sucks so much of my time because I get like in a rabbit hole and then I, you know, and stuff. So, but then I'll like, man, I didn't reply to anything for a couple days, and I love it. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, that's what's nice about having the three of us on. They're all kind of on it.
One of
it,
yeah, yeah.
And then I just go through our DMs and I pull out the show, and there it is. And I've stole, we go, hey, can we steal your poll? It's a really good idea. And yeah, go ahead. And so that's where we get a lot of the stuff. So it's really content driven from the listener. So
definitely. And then you mentioned Baby Shark. It just reminded me, I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I bought this thing at Target that it's a baby shark. And you put it in the bathtub, and it plays the song. Oh. I'm probably gonna hate it, but
I'm probably gonna need to buy that.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, yeah. That was like $12, and it doesn't play it unless you put it in the water in the bathtub, and it sings the whole song apparently.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. So right before I left, I was like, here, you know, I put some gifts for him, because it's hard to leave, you know. I'm sure you know.
Yeah, so. My wife is expecting in November, and so she's like, this is the one time you might get to go. So go and enjoy.
Take advantage.
So I'm here.
Yep, definitely. So awesome. Well, I had a fun time talking with you guys, man. You guys are experts, and I could learn a lot from you guys. I know we didn't even divulge into Living Set, so maybe we'll save that for the next next time we guys
definitely.
Get you guys on. So,
sure.
All right, thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
Nice meeting you.
Yep, nice meeting you as well. Jeff Ostetler now is.